This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With less than 3 weeks to go before Election Day, a new VPR poll finds the race for governor in a dead heat between Republican Phil Scott and Democrat Sue Minter. One of the key issues in the race is health care and a new plan to dramatically change how health care providers are reimbursed in Vermont. The idea is to move away from the current fee-for-service system that reimburses providers for every procedure and replace it with a system that rewards quality and positive health care outcomes. The Green Mountain Care Board is set to vote on the plan next week. Should the board wait until a new governor is elected? Sue Minter says the answer is no.
I don't believe that a conversation that they're having now is the end. It's really the beginning. Am I concerned about what the details are? Yes, very much. Do I think it should be put on hold right now as they're right at the moment of having these negotiations? I would not ask to be put on hold something that's been worked on for many years.
Today in Vermont Edition, we'll talk with Republican candidate Phil Scott about this and many other issues. Phil, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Bob.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What are the most important issues that you want the next governor to focus on? Are you an undecided voter? What factors will influence how you will make a decision in this race? We'd love to hear from you today. 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. As I mentioned, the Green Mountain Care Board is set to vote next week on this new reimbursement plan known as All Payer. And backers of the proposal say it's needed because the current fee-for-service system is driving up healthcare expenditures, and they want to shift to a system that reimburses providers based on the quality of care and positive healthcare outcomes. They say there's still a lot of details to be worked out, and they view the board vote as really the very first step in the process. Do you think the board should wait until the next governor is elected before proceeding down this path?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think the mission of what they're trying to accomplish is something that many of us share. But the devil is in the details. And this is, I feel, being rushed at the very last minute, trying to get ahead of possibly who the next governor might be. And I believe it's incumbent upon the administration, the Green Mountain Care Board, and others to be sure that everyone does have the details, fully understands what this concept means to us. And we've had a number of failed initiatives over the last few years. And so there's a lack of faith and trust in whether we should move forward with some of these big ideas and initiatives. So I would like us to slow down a bit. And it's not about the election. It's about slowing down the process enough so that everyone is at least educated and more comfortable with what this could mean to them. And I just think we're rushing this at the last minute. And I know that they've been working on it for a couple of years, but I don't have a sense that everyone fully understands it. And if I could, down in Manchester, we were at a gubernatorial debate with the hospital association, and there was maybe 100 or 150 people in the audience. And that question came up, should we move forward with this? And I turned the question around and asked the audience, is there anybody here? You're in the healthcare field. Anybody here that can tell us what this means to you, can explain this fully, some of the details that are missing? And not a single hand came up. So we're not alone. I mean, I think we just need to be more transparent, maybe just more background on what this is going to mean to us.
Recently, Al Gobay, the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, was on the program and was asked about this. What about the details? We had a number of callers who wanted to know the details. And he said that really those details won't be known for some time because first the board will vote on it, yes or no. And then there will be an accountable care organization that will try to negotiate deals with both the providers and the payers. So it's details to come. Is that a leap of faith that the board is asking Vermonters to accept here?
Yeah, I think it's a leap of faith that many have been asked to to acknowledge over the last number of years. And again, that's I think that's what got us into this situation. We took a leap of faith in terms of Vermont Health Connect. I think there was a bit of a leap of faith when it came to the single payer initiative and exploring that. And it took a long time to get through to the point where it was determined by the governor that we couldn't afford it. But that was over 4 or 5 years. So I think we have a severe lack of faith and trust. We've had, again, some failed initiatives administratively, and I just think that we need to prove ourselves first. And I think that that's the approach that we should take, is to slow down a little bit. I'm not sure what the hurry is. Let's have some more hearings. Let's have some further debate. We may come to the same conclusion that this is the best thing for Vermont, but we'll have more people on board and everyone somewhat pulling in the same direction so that we're not adversarial, that we're actually working on this together to make sure it's successful if this is the approach we're going to take.
So if you're elected governor, will you try to put the brakes on this and slow it down a little bit?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not sure by signing on to this, as the governor and the Greenmount Care Board are advocating, that there is any slowing down at that point, that it may set in motion the negotiations and so forth. And then I've heard the statements by some saying, well, the next governor could refuse to move forward. Well, that's like a go-no-go type of situation. And I'm just advocating that we just slow down to make sure we get it right. And if there are areas that we should make some changes, let's talk about them now at the front end of the process rather than at the end, and then force the governor to make a decision that in concept might be a good idea, but the lack of details or foresight puts us in a position where we're signing on to the wrong deal.
So would it be your preference then that the Green Mountain Care Board not vote on this next week?
I would like them to slow this down and wait and make sure they have as many hearings as possible, as many advocates come forward. I'd like to hear from others who say we fully are supportive of this and everyone, the organizations like AARP, for instance, I'd like to hear what they have to say about this. And is this something that they see as important to the state? And maybe some of business groups from around the state, maybe let them weigh in and say, yeah, this makes sense to us. So just more information.
So as I mentioned at the top of the program, our new VPR poll shows this race to be very, very close. It's possible that neither you nor Sue Minter will get 50% of the vote on Election Day because there are other candidates in the race. Now, if that happens, the 2017 legislature will elect the next governor of Vermont at the beginning of the new session. Would you pledge right now to support the candidate who receives the most votes in November and urge lawmakers to do the same thing?
I've been consistent in that. As you may recall, there was a push in the last election. It came down to a legislative vote. There were many who thought that lawmakers should vote their conscience, so to speak. And I was consistent. And I, as I've done when I was a state senator, this vote came to us on a couple of occasions, at least once, maybe twice. And I said then that I think the candidate who received the most votes should win. That's the way I feel, unless there's something, the real barrier to that candidate or potential governor being sworn into office. If there's something criminal in nature or something that really egregious, then you should have other thoughts. But the candidate with the most votes should win, and I've been consistent in that throughout my political career. So the answer is yes. I would pledge to support whoever receives the most votes.
Let's go to our callers and start with Steve, who's calling from Killington. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
We sure can, Steve.
Okay. I'll ask my question. Phil. My name's Steve Foley. I live in Killington, Vermont, and on the recent last governor's election, Stuart Ledbetter from News Channel 5 had an exit poll. The number one topic concerning voters was property tax. And for myself, a senior citizen who has had their property tax increase over 500% in the past 10, 15 years, and yet I'm on fixed income, it's almost made living in Vermont impossible. Because my income stays, but the property tax go up. What is your position on property tax?
Well, Steve, I feel your pain. I think many Vermonters do. I've traveled the state and engaged with a lot of Vermonters, and that is their concern. It's about this crisis of affordability we face as a state, and it's very real to us that we're. Everyone's working two and three jobs just to make ends meet and not able to get by. So they're trying to pay their property taxes, make their rent payments, mortgage payments, and so forth, and they just are really struggling. So this is an issue that we need to address. I had a woman last week, the week before, who approached me and said that she was a fairly liberal Democrat, but she was thinking about voting for me because I'm talking about this crisis of affordability. And she said that she herself is moving back in with her parents at 50 years old because she can't afford her property taxes. And her mom would like to retire, but she's 74, but she can't retire because they need to meet their expenses, their property taxes and so forth. Are so far out of reach. So this is a problem for our youth. It's a problem for our seniors. We have 86,000 kids that we're educating, 20,000 less than 20 years ago, and it's costing $1.6 billion to do so. And we're going to have to look at the spending side in order to address this. And while I'm not, I wouldn't have created Act 46 and the craft of the law and the way it was done, and I think it needs some changes. I at least highlighted the fact that we need to be focusing on the spending side.
So on the whole idea of property tax reform, I think about two-thirds of all property owners in Vermont participate in income sensitivity. So they pay their school taxes based on the value rather than the value of their property. And it's around 2.5% of their income. Do you think those folks are clamoring for property tax reform?
I think most Vermonters are, regardless of income scale. And I think that many are somewhat insulated with the, I think it's $110,000 or $120,000 of income that insulates them from those property taxes. But they still see their bills. They still feel the pain. They still listen to their neighbors. They still have kids and friends and families that are facing similar situations. And I feel as though we're not addressing the issue. We're trying to insulate and soften the blow by increasing the income eligibility. And I think what we should be doing is focusing on the spending, trying to focus on the economy and trying to restore the vitality of the economy in Vermont so we can attract more people to come to Vermont, to have more youth in our state. And I think that will help in some respects. But we're educating less kids, and it's costing us a lot of money to do so.
Today on the program, our guest is Republican gubernatorial candidate Phil Scott. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Ken in Newfane. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Mr. Scott, could you speak plainly and without adornment to the people of Vermont and say whether climate change is a function of human activity or is it not? Because, as you know, this has a lot to do with economic development, has a lot to do with jobs. And as governor, you would have a national influence working with other governors on this matter. So what is your position on this?
Yeah, I've been clear about that. I believe climate change is real. It is affecting us. It's affecting our economy. We need to prepare ourselves for that, the inevitable, I believe. And I believe it's man-made. And so I believe we as a state have an obligation to do whatever we can to protect ourselves and prepare for the future and to educate others as well. But I think we're moving down that path. The renewable 90% renewables by 2050 is a goal that has been adopted, and I think it's doable with technology. I think we're going to have a vast increase in technology and battery storage and all kinds of different new initiatives. I believe we haven't seen the end of what the next new technology might be, but I'm sure they're working on it right now. And the game changer, from my standpoint, will be the country or entity that solves the issue of long-term storage of energy. That will unleash renewables in a whole different way, so that there's some baseload demand power that is vital to our industry and manufacturing and so forth. So that's going to be a game changer from my perspective when we or the country or whoever it is that solves that mystery.
Today on the program, our guest is gubernatorial candidate of the Republican Party, Phil Scott. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to talk about the budget and also the tone of this campaign. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, the Republican candidate for governor, Phil Scott. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. At your website, you wrote, and this is to do with the budget, quote, "I believe we can reduce the operational cost of every agency and department by 1 cent for every dollar currently spent in my first year in office. Saving one penny on the dollar generates about $55 million in savings." It seems like your estimate also includes hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funds. Is that the case?
Well, it's more of a goal, a concept in terms of trying to put everything in perspective. When you think about your own individual budget or your budget of your company or even your family household, you think about, where can I save money? There's always savings somewhere. And you think, just to put it in perspective, from a state government standpoint, if you could save a penny for every dollar spent, we could save, and that does include federal money, we could save $55 million. And that's just to put everything into concept. In reality, very difficult to do when you think about, are you going to save that penny because you have federal dollars that are leveraged against your state dollars. So from a practical standpoint, you couldn't do that. But from a broad perspective, just thinking about how do you save it? It's not that much money per dollar, and that's the I think that was what I wanted to highlight, that this is doable, because if you put it in your own only daily lives, I'm sure you could think of how you could save a penny a dollar.
So if you don't affect the federal fundings, the savings that you're suggesting are going to be a lot less.
Sure. But you could there are going to be different areas where you're going to save much, much more. And I've used this for an example a few times, that Medicaid, for instance, and that's leveraged money as well. But the administrative costs of Medicaid have increased by almost $100 million over the last 7 years. And that's a great deal of money. So if you could save that or a portion of that, that would go a long ways. And the administrative costs, that's about a 15% admin cost for Medicaid. When you compare that to like a Blue Cross Blue Shield, who delivers insurance and reimbursements and so forth, their admin costs are about 7%. So there's areas of savings there, and more so in different departments than others. But we just have to, again, look for opportunities and modernize government in a way that we can deliver services in a much different way, and trying to just be more efficient.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Steve in Montpelier. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you very much. Phil, I just want to say I've been a Democrat, but I really support you. You've always been a man of good thoughts, and I just am definitely supporting you. I've been a nurse for 30 years, and I am very concerned about these changes in the healthcare system. Primary care providers are at the bottom of the medical pyramid, in case people forget. We're going to start cutting their funding and their money. We're going to have a major health crisis in the state. And sometimes the left pushes so hard. We're not a big state like California. I just really support your thoughtful approach. I hope that this fee-for-service issue is a big one. And if we do something that harms our primary care providers, they could leave the state. And I'm also concerned how we're going to take care of everybody if everybody's just a number and we aren't able to prioritize. I'm just really concerned what these changes are going to do to health care. And thank you very much. I'll take my answer off air.
Yeah, thanks very much, Steve, and I appreciate the support. That's one of my fears is the unintended consequences, things that we hadn't thought about. I've also thought about, you know, if we want to take care of people, the patient, and I get that, and trying to prevent and determine how we pay for it in a way that takes care of the patient holistically. And I understand the concept, but I think it does favor in some respects geographically. It might favor areas where we have a younger, healthier population. Maybe Chittenden County, it wouldn't affect as much. But when you get into the Northeast Kingdom or areas where you have an aging population, I think the numbers will be skewed, and I'm not sure the opportunities are there to it'll be more expensive to take care of an elderly population than it is in a younger population. So I'm just these are the questions that need to be answered, and people like Steve have some thoughts about that and what it's going to mean again to providers and whether we're going to be able to keep our providers here. That's going to be important as well. So unintended consequences, devil's in the details.
Let's talk to Mike, who's calling from Charlotte. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and good luck to Mr. Scott. I enjoy the dialogue. I'm a physical therapy provider and have been at some of the public hearing meetings for the Green Mountain Care Board. I think they're on the right track. I've read a lot of their minutes from their working group. The switch over to this all-payer model is complex. But I think they have done more than their due diligence on this in their very thorough, comprehensive approach. One of their first primary concern is primary care access. They know that's a problem. The second and third are drugs and overdose and suicide, as well as chronic illnesses. So when I read their information, I think they've really done their homework. I don't think they're moving too fast. It's a very thorough, comprehensive approach. A lot of the public meetings, as we typically see, people are uninformed. That's understood. But I would say this federal money that's coming our way, I think we're one of six states, could be a big push. And the beauty to this overhaul is it's all volunteer on the part of us as providers. So it's not being forced down our throat, but there will certainly be incentives. And being a provider, I witness the care model every day, and it is not good. And I think what they've done really will address this. So I'm all set. Thanks for listening.
Well, again, I would agree that what we're doing right now isn't working, and we have to look for something that will. And I'm in agreement with that, and I may be in agreement with what you're saying that this is the model that we should use. But I am fearful that not everyone does understand, and there are a lot of questions. And I think that we have an obligation to answer some of those questions rather than force this upon people. And I agree. I've heard the voluntary basis for the providers, but what about the patients? Is it volunteer for them? And I guess it would be if you wanted to find an entity or a provider that didn't go one way or the other, whichever approach you wanted to take. But doesn't that limit their options as well? And so, I just there's a lot of questions, and I'm sure that in time, we'll get to a point where we can either decide to move forward or not. But I don't think we're there yet. I think we need more of these public dialogues and have people understand just exactly what we're getting ourselves into.
Let's talk to Pedro, who's calling from Wilmington. Hi, Pedro. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. And hello, Mr. Scott. The reason I'm calling is I hear a lot of talk about the high property taxes in Vermont, and which is true. I'm a homeowner, and we know what this is. But the fact that taxes have had to go up in Vermont is a direct result of the tax cutting fever that that especially Republicans have had during the last 30 years. So, in all your Mr. Scott is saying that is we need to look at the spending side, cut more, and not ever raise taxes. That's my worry here. We need to look at the root cause of this problem of us not having enough money, because we don't get the aid to states from the federal government because the federal government doesn't have as much money. Thank you.
Okay, Pedro, we also got this email from Steve who wants to know, why are you so opposed to raising taxes for those who are most fortunate, those who are very wealthy, so that the vast majority of Vermonters can work their way successfully out of poverty?
Well, first of all, I'll try and answer both of those questions combined, and I thank Pedro for calling in. I just went through Wilmington yesterday from Bennington into Brattleboro, so beautiful during that drive. But I would contend that we've had a lot of raising of taxes in this state. And I'll just talk about the state, not the federal issue, but from a state perspective. They've been pretty creative over the last 6 or 7 years in taxing all kinds of things. And I believe that the taxing capacity is at the end of its ropes. I don't think there is more taxing capacity or none that that Vermonters can withstand. I go out every day and talking with people, and it's a reality. They're struggling to get by. And again, they're working that 2 and 3 jobs just to do so. I ran into another gentleman up in the Northeast Kingdom who was working at a car dealership. And I remember him retiring from somewhere. And I asked him why he was still working. And he said, well, I needed to get back to work. And I said, well, I understand that. I don't know if I want to retire either. And he said, no, I have to work. I can't pay my property taxes. I can't afford to stay here in Vermont unless I work. And I'm 72 years old, and I don't want to work 40 hours a week, but I have to. And that's something that we have to address. And I would say again, by tax, we have one of the most progressive income taxes in the nation right here in Vermont. So I think we're taxing the upper end of the income level at a higher rate than most states do. So I don't know how many of the more of them we're going to have here. And the reality is that and regardless of how people, if they want to accept it or not, people make decisions on where they live due to tax policy. And there are many of our those who are at the other end of life that have made good and done well for themselves have decided to move elsewhere just because of income taxes. And they're moving to Florida. And so we have to be careful that we don't push the limit so far that it just ends up burdening those in the middle again. It's the middle class that I'm so worried about.
I want to talk to you about the tone of this campaign and what's how the tone has maybe changed in the last couple of weeks. The Republican Governors Association has spent almost $2 million on TV ads. The first series of their ads promoted you, but then the next series were very critical of Sue Minter. At the same time, the Democratic Governors Association has spent around $750,000 attacking you. I think both you and Sue Minter feel these ads have distorted the truth. It's got the feel of what's happening at the national level. Are you disappointed by the way that the gubernatorial race is playing out on both sides?
Yeah, I've run, this is my 9th election. I've never run a negative ad in my life. I've never taken an ad out where I talk about my opponents. I believe that we should be talking about what we bring to the table. I believe there's a lack of faith and trust in the political process, a lack of faith in our political leaders. And it's all due to things of this nature where it's so unfortunate when you run for office and many seek to just tear you down rather than lift themselves up, trying to make voters understand where you're standing, what you can bring to the table. And instead, I think the tactic has been to degrade your opponent and tear your opponent down to make yourself look better. And I think that's a pretty sad commentary. We're seeing it on the national level. But we can do better ourselves, individually. We don't have to do this ourselves. We can't coordinate with the RGA or the DGA. We all understand that, or any outside group. You just can't do it. But we can do it ourselves.
You can't coordinate, but you could say to them, I don't like what you're doing. I don't like the tone of what you're doing. Please change it. And I think back to the 2006 race for Congress with Peter Welch, the Democrat, and Martha Rainville, the Republican, and they made it very clear to outside groups, don't do it. We don't want you here.
Well, maybe if you made that contention to begin with, but I would advocate. There was one complaint early on in the campaign cycle where they claimed that I was coordinating with the RGA because of the quality of my voice in one of their campaign ads. And that was dismissed by the Attorney General eventually. But I'm going to take the safe ground. Well, I'm not coordinating with the RGA in any sense of the word. And I'm just going to pay attention to my campaign. It wouldn't be ads. I will say this. Some of the ads I've seen against my opponent wouldn't be ads that I would run. I believe in promoting yourself and trying to educate voters on as to what you can do, your vision is, what it is that you can bring to the table in order to make a much more prosperous, more affordable Vermont. And that's what I'm running on.
Today in the program, our guest is the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Phil Scott. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to talk about renewable energy. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, my guest, the Republican candidate for governor, Phil Scott. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Julia in Rutland. Hi, Julia. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I appreciate the opportunity to hear Phil Scott, describe his positions on many issues. I just wanted to say I moved back to Vermont in 2002 into the middle of a gubernatorial election. And what's interesting is I don't even remember who was running then because the voices were so moderate. They were talking issues. You listen to one, you listen to the other. It didn't really matter, even what party they were, because they were talking issues. And I've been living in Washington State, where a lot of the elections are quite contentious, and there's a lot of flamboyant characters. And I just think that, number one, I think the criticism of the other candidate is important because it does help distinguish you from them. But the bitterness of the attacks needs to go. And I realize candidates don't always have control over what their supporters are saying about them, partly because of the rule against, collaboration. But still, it doesn't do anybody any good. And thinking back to that 2002 election, it was so refreshing to actually hear, the two sides discussing issues and not personalities. So thanks very much.
Well, I do think the tone of this campaign between Sue and myself and the debates and forums we've had, I think it's been remarkable. I believe we are talking about the issues. Some of the ads that some of the groups are taking out against each and every one of us. I've listened to one this morning, and I was really disappointed by what I heard. I think it's misinformation, misstatements, and so forth. And I think it's unfortunate that we're moving down this path. But having said that, I think we have an obligation to react appropriately and act appropriately. So I'm proud of the way we're running our campaign.
I want to talk to you about wind energy. In our new VPR poll, we asked the question, who should have the final say on where wind generators are placed? Now, 39% said landowners, 34% said community members, and just 12% said the Vermont Public Service Board, a group that really makes that decision right now. Do you think lawmakers should consider a bill that would give towns basically veto power to block an industrial wind project for their community?
I'm not sure about complete veto power, but I do believe that communities should have more, much more input than they do now. The bill that was passed that the governor vetoed in this session, I thought was a step in the right direction. Many weren't happy with it from either side, but I thought I think it was fair. And I think that it should have been allowed to be signed into law. What was eventually passed after the fact was something that was much more watered down. So I feel communities should have much more input in the process. But I also believe there should be a process that we all adhere to.
The new law gives towns substantial deference in the Public Service Board process. You don't think that goes far enough?
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. But at this point in time, I think that there's many who feel that their voice doesn't matter, that they don't get a say in this, even when they're adamantly opposed to whatever project, particularly in the Grafton area up in the Northeast Kingdom. They don't feel that they've been allowed to be part of this process. So I would advocate that we should have more voice, more people involved so that we cite these properly. And let's cite them in areas that need the power as well. I think that that's important, not just where it's lucrative to do so.
There's an interesting situation going on down in Windham, where a company that wants to develop 24 wind turbines is actually offering cash to the property owners of the community. They're talking about $565,000 a year. And to do that for 25 years, that would be a total amount of $14 million. If my math is correct, homeowners would get about $700 a year each in cash. What do you think of what's going on down there?
Well, I do think I know the attorney general ruled that it isn't a bribe, but it sure sounds as though they're enticing those voters that are going to be taking action soon, entice them into voting their way. It sounds a bit like a bribe, and at the very least, it is an area of enticement. So I and people are, reality is. As I've said many times, people in Vermont are struggling. You know, this crisis of affordability is real. And that money, $700, might look like it could be a welcome help to some of these families that are really struggling to get by. So I think it's unfair myself, but the Attorney General has ruled on that.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Stuart in Norwich. Hey, Stuart, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. I'm concerned about the current and actually past state of Vermont with respect to the unfriendly business climate that exists, the high rate of taxation, which is, depending on what statistics you read, is probably somewhere between 1 and 5 of the most highly taxed states in the Union. And the fact that we've got a death tax here, and that it's just not a place where new business can find a happy home. And I'll cite one example, which is a personal example from my own family. My son, who grew up in Norwich, Vermont, founded a company 12 years ago, and he didn't found it in Vermont, and there was a good reason for that. It goes back to the fact that Vermont is business unfriendly. Today, the company hires or employs several hundred people worldwide, and they've got a very, about a 15,000 square foot office in Lebanon, New Hampshire. He would love to live in Vermont, but it doesn't make economic sense to live here. So unless that changes, and I've only lived in Vermont for 50 years, so started living here sometime before the Civil War, it's just, and Vermont wasn't always the way it is today. If you go back to when I first got here in the 60s, Vermont was a different kind of place. It was not a high tax place, and it was not a socialist domain such as it's become under Bernie Sanders.
Okay, Stuart, we really appreciate your phone call. Members of the Shumlin administration would say that Vermont is not unfriendly for business. They would cite the thousands of renewable energy jobs that have been created over the past few years. They'd look at Vermont's low unemployment rate. Are they wrong?
Well, certainly you have to be a cheerleader for the state, and that's important that we change the dialogue. And I think that that's what I'd like to emphasize, that we need to focus on economic vitality. We need to change the reputation that we do have outside the state. I talk to many people when I'm traveling, and they just view Vermont as a place that's totally unfriendly to business. So we just need to change the culture. We need to change and tell our story. We need to market Vermont in a much different way. And we can, if we focus like a laser on the economy, then maybe we can entice more companies to come to Vermont. We can, if we provide some continuity and predictability in our legislative process and administratively and tax policy and so forth, so you know what to count on, so there's not that predictable path. Then I believe that more companies will be able to expand, that they'll be able to bring more job and opportunities to Vermonters. And if we, it's our demographics that are driving this issue. We have a population that's stagnant. We have less people in our workforce, less people working today than there were 7 years ago, less people in the workforce. Our unemployment rate is low, but it doesn't tell the whole story. It's about how many people are working, not how many people aren't. And that number has decreased. And that's the area that we have to focus on is our middle class, bringing more opportunity so that we have more revenue organically.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Paul in Barrie. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Greetings and felicitations, Lieutenant Governor Scott. It's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I had a couple of questions, one of which revolved around the wind power question. Do you feel there might be a place in Vermont for buoyant airborne terminals systems? These are wind generators that are without towers and are simply erected into the sky using lighter-than-air technology. The other question has to do with, do you feel that the cost of education has increased based upon unfunded federal mandates? And I wanted to thank you for your meditation on the concept of unintended consequences, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you again. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Paul.
In terms of the first question, I'd never heard of anything like that, Paul, and maybe this is new technology, again, that's going to be developed. I'm not sure. But I think things will change in the future in terms of renewables, and I'm all in favor of new technology, so look forward to that. In terms of the spending and mandates and so forth, yeah, I think that some of the federal mandates, some of the state mandates have all had a part in driving the cost of education. And that's why we need to look at what we're doing and think outside the box, trying to have more interactive learning, trying to have more school choice and more choices for parents and students to be able to fit the needs of the students themselves. And I believe that we're spending $1.6 billion to educate 86,000 kids. And if I went out to the listenership here and asked you to develop a system that where we could educate our kids for $1.6 billion, it would look far different than it does today. And we have to have the courage to think outside the box in order to do that and have a better outcome.
So you think it's realistic that you can cut the state budget by 1%?
I believe we can limit the growth. You know, I haven't talked about cutting costs here. I mean, I've talked about cutting costs, but I'm talking about limiting growth. What I've said is, let's look back at what the economy and wages grew last year, and if it grew at 1 or 2%, let's limit the amount of growth by 1 or 2%. I haven't said anything about cutting back, just limiting growth. And that's a very, very different concept.
Well, you did talk about saving one penny on the dollar.
Sure, because of the cost of living does increase. And there are certain areas of government that keep continuing to grow. But when some people talk about level funding, they're saying spending the same amount as last year. I'm saying just let's limit the amount. We've been doing it at a rate of 5% every year. Let's cut it back to realism.
Well, according to our VPR poll, this race for governor is a dead heat. We're going to continue to follow this race very closely. Phil Scott is the Republican candidate for governor. Phil, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me on.
Tomorrow in Vermont Edition, my guest will be the Democratic candidate for governor, Sue Minter. Send your questions for Sue Minter to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.